Coming up, got Marcus Morris talking about the NBA. He unleashed on a lot of different topics. You're not going to want to miss that later in the show. But first, we got Mark Titus with college basketball players to watch this month in March Madness. Old friend Mark Titus coming up right now. Welcome back to another episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Today, joining me to talk about March Madness is a very old friend, Mark Titus. What's up, Mark?
Kevin, this is exciting. I'm happy to reconnect with you, man. We go way back. It's been a while. I'm excited to talk ball. I will say, naming the show after yourself is a little, you know, a little narcissistic. Something I would certainly never do. But I'm happy to see the KOC show taking off and being a great success, and I hope my presence can keep it going here today.
Yeah, if you have a hard time finding Mark Titus' show, you don't have to search for Club Trillion. You have to search for the Mark Titus Show. Not hard to find. You're over at Barstool Sports doing your stuff there. Now I'm with Yahoo Sports. First met, 9 years ago with The Ringer. It's good to connect with you again today. So what we're going to be doing today, Mark, is a March Madness prospect draft. This is going to be the March Madness prospects you got to know. If you're an NBA fan coming in, these are the players you got to know, the names you got to know. And to do that, we're going to be drafting these teams. 5 starters, 1 6th man. You're going to be doing the locks. I'm going to be doing the gambles. Each team is going to have 2 guards, 1 forward, 1 center, and a 6th man. So for the gambles, these are going to be the guys that I'm selecting. They're not certainties to be great NBA players. In some cases, they're not even certainties to enter the draft this year. And you're going to be doing the locks. These are the guys that you're 100% about. You feel really confident they're going to be good players long term. So, Mark, you want to get to start us off?
I would love to start us off. So I'm going to just go in order position. I understand that modern basketball is in a lot of ways positionless, but I'm old school KOC, so I like still doing it in point guard, shooting guard, small forward, you know, that whole thing. So I'll start with a point guard, more of a combo guard, but I put him on my team as a point guard. Jace Richardson at Michigan State, Jason Richardson's son, freshman guard for Michigan State, was a recruit that I think wasn't exactly a highly touted guy. Like, I think they thought highly of him, but it wasn't like, you know, he wasn't an obvious one and done when he got to East Lansing. And Michigan State has been one of the bigger surprises in college basketball this year. I think their roster coming into the season did not excite me. They were not that good last year. They lost their 3 best players, and somehow they've gotten way better. And they are 2-seed in this tournament. They won the Big Ten by multiple games. And I think the story of Michigan State basketball season, in a lot of ways, is the emergence of Jace Richardson, who can score at any level. Michigan State is a team that cannot shoot the basketball. He is the one exception. He is the one guy that can get hot from 3. He is the one guy that, like, I guess not the one guy, but he brings a lot of energy and a lot of he's the catalyst for when they go on runs. It's the ball is almost always going through his hands, and he's the playmaker for them. He has been watching him from the start of the season when he wasn't even starting for Michigan State, to then becoming like a guy that was getting a little bit more minutes, to then becoming a starter, to then becoming the guy who's like kind of carrying the team. It's why I love college basketball, is stories like his. He has kind of like crammed like a 4-year, what would be like an old school 4-year development for a player. He's done that in like basically 1 year. And I have no idea where he's going to get drafted now, because I think at the start of the year, like, no one really expected him to go out for the draft. And now it's like, I mean, if you told me he's going to be a top 10 pick, that makes sense to me based on what I've seen. So Jace Richardson can do it all. And he's got the Michigan State DNA inside of him, which is to say that he's a gritty dude. He's a hard-nosed player. He plays his ass off. And it's been a joy to watch him. And I hope he comes back, just because I love watching him at Michigan State. But he's unfortunately, for Michigan State fans, too good. He's got to go to the NBA.
I mean, I have him ranked in my top 10 right now. He's only 6'3", but yeah, I think he should be a top 10 pick. There's too much skill. Like, yes, he's only 6'3", but there's a ton of successful guards, combo guards that are 6'3" in the NBA. And with him, like, you look at the raw numbers, if like you're Googling Jace Richardson, you see 12 points per game, 1.9 assists. And it's like, okay, I mean, low numbers here, but look at his numbers on synergy. It's amazing to see. If you look at the synergy efficiency, spot ups, 90th percentile, pick and roll, 96th percentile, transition, 93rd percentile, off screens, 85th percentile. It doesn't matter the action, doesn't matter the area of the floor. If he's creating for himself, he can play off of others. In my draft guide launching in a week, the comp, one of the comps I have for him is Rip Hamilton, because of just the way he's able to move constantly without the ball in his hands. And, you know, I think it's interesting you put him as your point guard. And I know, you know, basketball is kind of positionless nowadays. Do you see him long term as more of a point guard than kind of that off ball guy?
I don't know, because I think he's great off the ball. I think he was a point guard on to me, because when I watch Michigan State, he is their get out of jail guy. Like, he is their guy that the one problem with Michigan State this season, and they're a great team and they've obviously won a ton of games. Their one problem is their offense gets clunky and sticky, and when they get slowed down, they love getting out in transition. When they get put in the half court, there's a lot of like, what do we do now? Because they don't have a ton of shooters. The big guys are limited in what they can do. They're great screen setters, great rebounders, but they're not exactly dudes that you're going to feed the post and let them cook. But Jace Richardson is the one guy that you get the ball to and he makes something happen over and over and over again. So, yeah, I don't know at the next level if he's going to be that. He is, like you said, he's so great off the ball. But that's why I put him at point guard, because what I see out of him is like, if he was on my team, he's the guy that I'm like, I trust you to run whatever it is we want to run. And they are so guard dominated that, four of their best players are probably guards. So, like you said, with the raw numbers, you look at his points per game or assists or whatever else, it might not jump out to you. But if you actually watch these Michigan State games, he is the singular talent that rises above everyone else. And he is, like I said earlier, like, he's the guy that when they're in a scoring slump and it's been 4.5 minutes and Michigan State hasn't scored a field goal, it's almost always Jace Richardson almost always has his fingerprints on the play that gets them out of the slump, so to speak.
And he's going to have a lot of those moments this month. And I have Michigan State going to the Final Four, and I have them losing to Duke in my championship game. Them to actually get there, like you said, they don't have a lot of shooting. Jace Richardson's really going to have some big games, some big clutch moments. And he has, you know, throughout the year, the step back three, you know, some of the crossovers to get to the basket for a 6'3" guy's ability to finish at the rim is pretty amazing. So I'm a huge Jace Richardson fan. I would also have him on a lock team as well. So Titus, on your kind of locks, who else you have on your roster?
Okay, the next guy I had on my team at my shooting guard, I'm putting VJ Edgecombe at Baylor, who is an athletic marvel. He's 6'5", can jump out of the gym. Had a little bit of a slow start to the season, I'd say. I think the opening night of college basketball season, Baylor played Gonzaga. It was like pretty much the only marquee game on opening night of the college basketball season. Baylor lost by 40. VJ Edgecombe could not score to save his life, had a really rough game. But if you watch that game, his athleticism stood out immediately. Like, he's so springy. I think he could be great defensively. The one issue I think you might have with him is his three-point shooting, which has actually gotten a lot better. I think as the season's worn on, he's become more of a reliable shooter for Baylor. This Baylor season has not been as good, I think, as I was hoping it could be. But he's a guy, again, like, I'm going to keep saying this about a lot of these guys because I'm more of a college basketball guy and I would love for all of them to come back. He's a guy that, like, 15 years ago comes back and, like, you know, is just dominates everybody and shows that he's like a generational prospect type thing. And that's what I think he's going to be when he gets to the NBA, is he's going to iron out some of these kinks. But he's really the only thing I look at him and I think this might be a slight problem is the 3-point shooting, which has actually improved throughout the season. So I think he's on the right track. And I think VJ Edgecombe just has a knack for scoring the ball. And on top of all of that, he has all of the physical tools you would want from a highly drafted player in an NBA draft.
It's interesting with the 3-point shooting for him. Like you said, he started the year pretty horribly shooting. Right now he's at 34.5% from 3-point range. If you look at his high school numbers on synergy, his last 2 years combined in high school, he shot 42.8% on 208 attempts. So he shot really well to close high school. Start of the year pretty poorly. He's been a lot better, as you said, the last second half of the year. Off the dribble, he's not nearly as good as he is off the catch, which is why I think it makes sense to put him as a two guard. The shot creation aspect with him is my, like, I think there's no doubts about the athleticism, you know, the fearlessness that he plays with. He draws a ton of fouls on drives to the basket. He does a lot of the little things. Like, you'll even see him set screens sometimes. Like, he'll do whatever the team needs. But, like, when people talk about him as a top five pick, that's where I'm like, does he need to be more of a creator? And do you think you've seen enough from him as a shot creator for him to kind of grow into that? Or is this really the month for him to have to prove
something? Well, that's right. That's right. I said earlier, like, I understand he's not going to. He's obviously going to be a very high pick in the draft. And for that reason, he's going to go out into the draft. But I think in a perfect world, in my mind, it's like, yeah, come back, show that you can be a shot creator. Maybe he's, I mean, I honestly think he has the potential to be like a number one pick type guy. And I know, like, the bands, that's not in comparison to the rest of the crop, but, like, that's like the tools that he has. I think in my mind, come back a year, demonstrate all of that, and you are just like an elite prospect. And it doesn't work that way. I understand. So yeah, I mean, what you brought up about a shot creation, I think, is a fair concern. I do think that he has the knack for just, like, he's just a hooper, you know? So, like, I think he's a guy that I trust to, like, figure some of this stuff out. And I've seen him get so much better throughout this season that I trust that he's going to just continue to get better as his career progresses. But yeah, I he's far from a perfect prospect, but I think I've seen enough to get excited about him for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fun player. And, you know, like you said, I agree with you. He is the type of guy where ideally he goes back to school and irons out some of those issues and comes out, you know, next year or even after a junior year. And he's like, oh my God, this guy is an instant impact player. Yeah. But I do agree he's going to be a success. It's just a matter of, is it, you know, an all-star level success or like just a good quality role player. Like in the draft guide, the comps I have for him are Victor Oladipo, Ben Mathurin, and Christian Brown with the Denver Nuggets. Yeah. Like kind of a range there where like different types of outcomes for him. So far you have your back. Continue.
No, I think for him, a lot of it's going to be like where he gets drafted. Cause I think like if he's drafted in the top five, that's almost too much pressure to put on him, you know, in this draft. But if he's in the top five,
you're thinking you're going to be the savior. Like that's what a fan base is hoping for. Like this guy is going to save us and put us in a position to, you know, change our fortunes for the years to come. Like the Wizards are going to be better. It's like, no, he's one of the guys, not the guy.
Yeah. I don't think he's that. I think he's worthy of a lottery pick, obviously. And I do think he's going to be successful in the sense that like he's going to be in the NBA for a very, very long time and be a productive NBA player. But yeah, I think if he does go super high based on his potential and he gets hit with that like franchise savior role, you know, out of the gate, that's tough. And I don't necessarily love that for him. But yeah, if he's taken like, you know, 10th in the draft, and you know, you're asking him to just be a guy who is a solid NBA player for a decade plus. I think I'm pretty sure about that.
So far you got your backcourt set. Edgecombe at the two, Richardson at the one. Who else you got, Mark?
All right. Small forward. A kid that I absolutely love, KOC. Con Knipple at Duke. A guy who plays second fiddle to Cooper Flagg, whose name will probably come up on this show before too long. But he is, I think Con Knipple, what I've seen out of him at Duke this year, he feels like a guy who could have been the best player on virtually every team in the country. He plays so under control. I mean, the shooting is the first thing that stands out to you. You know, he's 6'7", is a knockdown three-point shooter, can catch and shoot with a hand in his face very comfortably and knock down shots, can catch on the, you know, on the move or spotting up. If Cooper's if Flagg's the guy making everything happen and Knipple's just spotting up, he's a catch and shoot guy in that regard, but also they run a lot of stuff for him and he's coming off of screens and catching and shooting. But I also love like how under control he is with his drives, and he's got the, I mean, Luke is a lazy comparison, but like, that's where your mind goes when you see like a guy who gets to the bucket but like doesn't necessarily go straight up to like, you know, finish over people, and he's kind of patient with his tempo with how he drives, you know, and he's got a little bit of foul baiting in him when he He kind of comes to the jump stop and shot fakes and leans into the guy to create separation and finish at the rim. He's just so crafty around the rim and has the big body. And I was surprised as the season has worn on how much I trust Con Knipple, or how much I love watching Con Knipple with the ball in his hands. Because I think at the start of the season, I kind of pegged him as just like a shooter that was going to just kind of, you know, hang out over there and let Cooper be the playmaker. And Knipple will just like fit in wherever he can. And it's kind of not been that. I mean, like they run stuff for him and they give him the ball and let him create. And I think he's been awesome. I've fallen in love with Con Knipple and his game. And I think it's going to translate very well to the NBA.
I mean, Knipple's one of the reasons why they advanced with Cooper sidelined after he turned his ankle. Knipple ran a season high 14 pick and rolls in that game and showed the shot creation ability. I mean, you mentioned it, Mark, like the at rim finishing that Knipple has. He's not an above the rim guy, but he's big, he's wide. The way he carves out space into his floaters and some of these kind of off balance layups, he's more than just a shooter. He can handle the ball a little bit for you. He can create for his teammates. I'm a huge fan of Knipple. I don't know exactly where he'll get drafted, if he's more going to be top, you know, 6 or 7 or late lottery. I think a lot of that could be determined this month and then in pre-draft workouts with him. But I have no doubts that dude's going to be in the NBA for a very, very long time.
Also, very good defender. I mean, he's like Duke's defense as a team. They're great defensively. And I think Knipple, it feels like if you were stereotyping a guy like him, you would think like, yeah, let's just exploit that matchup and get the ball to whoever he's guarding and go after him. And he's
attack the white guy.
Yeah, attack the white guy who's a shooter. And it's like, good luck with that, man. He's obviously not Cooper Flagg level defender, but for what he brings offensively, you might assume that he gives up just as many points on the other end. And that's just not true. He's been a great defender this year for Duke.
I would assume his teammate Cooper Flagg is going to be your power forward.
Yeah, I you're pretty smart, KOC. You saw that coming. Cooper Flagg is my power forward.
Who else would it be?
Who else could it possibly be? So obviously between now and the draft, a lot will be said about Cooper Flagg and how great of a prospect he is. But I will just add my thoughts right here, and I'm sure I'll do it a million other times on a million different shows. But I think this kid had an insane amount of expectations placed on him. One, based on his prep career, just in general, that there was a lot of hype for him coming out, and then he reclassifies and his recruitment is between UConn and Duke, and he commits to Duke. All of that was like, there was enough hype with that. And then you throw in the fact that he's playing with the Team USA over the summer, and you know, highlights are highlights, and it's not exactly indicative of how good a player is or isn't. And we got a lot of highlights of Cooper Flagg like playing well against the best players in the world. But more than that, it was like the stories that were coming out of those games and those camps and the practices and all the other NBA players and all these great NBA coaches just have nothing but glowing praise about this kid. Before he's ever even played one game at Duke, just an absurd amount of hype. I don't know if it's trickled into... Like, I don't know if it's trickled outside of the college basketball diehard bubble. I don't know if like the rest of the basketball world is picking up on how good he has been. But I feel like somehow the hype is still understated. I still think that like I when I've watched him this year, I genuinely believe that Cooper Flagg is the most complete freshman I've ever seen in college basketball. Now, that does not mean that he has the highest potential. I think there are other guys that you get more excited about, like Anthony Davis comes to mind, like the way he was blocking shots and just the way his body moved. You're like, this is a freak. And Zion Williamson, same sort of thing. But Cooper Flagg literally does nothing. There's nothing on the basketball court that Cooper Flagg does not do well. Literally anything there is to do in a basketball court, he does at a bare minimum, a B+, A- level. He is as complete of a freshman player as I've ever seen. It's crazy because he turned 18 in December. And I think like I think part of why maybe the hype isn't, I know the hype for the draft is there, but like I honestly thought that he was going to just destroy college basketball and be the singular force that anybody talks about when they think about college basketball this year. And he's lived up to his part, but I think like the ACC, the conference he's playing in, isn't as strong. And somehow, like the discussions around the sport this year aren't as focused on Duke, even though they're a number one seed and they have the best player in the country. I don't know. I compare it to like the Zion year, and it's like Zion was a force of nature. And like you have Obama sitting courtside and like he's leading SportsCenter like every night. And honest to God, I feel like Cooper Flagg has delivered to that level. And for whatever reason, it I don't know if it's gotten outside of the college basketball NBA draft bubble per se. But anyway, that's my way of saying, like, if you're someone that's tuning into the Kevin O'Connor show and you're just an NBA fan and you don't pay attention to college, you're not really, you just know that Cooper Flagg's going to be the number one pick and you're thinking to yourself, why have I not heard more about this kid this year? Why is he not in my face a little bit more? For a guy who's supposed to be generational, I should be hearing more about him. I don't know the answer to that because he has been every bit as good as he was hyped up to be.
I mean, every bit as good, if not better, really, right? Yeah. Because the shot creation, right? Isn't that kind of the thing where it's like, okay, we know he can defend at a high level. We know he can be a playmaker, a connective piece and all that. We know he rebounds, he blocks shots, take a charge, scream, talk trash a little bit. The creation aspect where it's like,
Yeah.
Cooper can you know, like you said, A or like a B plus at literally everything, including creating his own shot right now.
Yeah, he takes like he'll even sometimes just pull out like a spin move, one legged fadeaway just out of nowhere. And you're just like, oh, I completely forgot that you could do this too. I forgot that you can do literally
the jumper's
everything.
Just so much better. But like how is he shooting so well?
Yeah, and all I think like it was weird. The second he turned 18, he like somehow developed a 3-point jump shot. It really is like the. You look like before his birthday and after his birthday, his shooting splits are it's crazy. I said not too long ago, and I thought about it. I slept on it a few days, and I seriously mean this. If I was doing a draft of college basketball players in college and basketball worked where it's like football, and we have an offensive team and a defensive team, and I need to draft a guy to play on my offense, and I need to draft a guy to play on my defense, Cooper Flagg would be my first pick for my offense team. And he would also be my first pick for my defense team.
He's like Travis Hunter. Travis Hunter is going to be a top pick in the NFL draft.
he literally is. I think he's the best offensive player in college basketball. I also think he's the best defensive player in college basketball. I can't say enough great things about the kid. And I think like the one thing is you look at the NBA, the transition to the NBA. I do wonder like, you know, can he be the best player? Is he going to win an NBA Finals MVP? Can he be the best player on an NBA champion? I don't know if his ceiling is that high, but I've seen you make the Scottie Pippen comparison. Like that's like his, you know, like his ultimate, that's the dream, you know, the upside, I guess you would say for him. I think that's perfect. I think if you're an NBA team and you can figure out a way to have Cooper Flagg be your second best player, Oh my God, you're going to be sitting pretty for a very long time. But yeah, I don't know what, you know, like he's elite defensively. I don't know if it does go wrong, quote unquote, for him. I think it would be that people expect him to be a guy who's going to step into the league and average like 25 a game. And I don't know if that's his game yet. Cause he's more of a guy that does everything really, 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 really good. And I don't know if he's like a super elite at these specific things, if that makes sense.
I think that's spot on. I mean, he's going to be awesome. He has such a high floor. I mean, I think his floor is probably like all-star. I don't think that's an exaggeration if he stays healthy. I think his floor is all-star caliber player, like, you know, maybe a one-time all-star, two-time all-star, but ceiling is if the ball handling and the shooting continues to ascend. Because for him, like you said, there's really nothing he does poorly. In the concerns section in my draft guide, I will have for him advanced ball handling and jumper consistency, because with the jumper, like you said, as soon as he turned 18, he's been an elite shooter. But prior to that, he was shaky in high school, shaky prior to turning 18 at Duke this season. So does that sustain in the NBA? How does he do with NBA range? The shot creation aspect is really what's going to determine his ceiling, if he's more than just a all-star caliber guy or the guy who can be the best player on your championship team. But no doubt a number one pick, and no doubt belongs on Mark Titus's team locks. So far you got Edgecombe and Richardson in your backcourt. You got two Dukies, Knipple and Flagg at your forward spots. Who's your five?
At my center position, I'm putting Derek Queen of Maryland, who I got to be honest, of all the guys I said, he might be the one that I have a slight concern about. And my concern would only be that he's not quite as dominant of a force defensively as I would like him to be. But I absolutely love this kid, and I've loved him all season from the start. I think his very first game at Maryland, he had a 20-20 game to open his career. he grabs boards. He's got a great feel for the game. And I think if you need like one game to get excited to watch, to get excited about Derrick Queen, I would just go back to his last game that he played. The very last game we saw of him, they lost to Michigan. Maryland did at the buzzer in the Big Ten tournament. I think Derrick Queen had 31 points. Yeah, there it is. He had 31 points. But it was the way he was going about it. He's going up against 2 7-footers at Michigan, and he's putting the ball on the floor and hitting jump shots. And, you know, he's just got such a great feel for the game. He's comfortable taking any shot. I think the worries I have about him is I would like for him to be a little bit more explosive. I think the three-point shooting, he is capable of hitting threes. He's only hit 4 on the season. He's not shooting it particularly well. The jump shot looks good for a big guy. You know, like he's obviously not a guy that's going to make his living behind the arc, but he is. If he can get to a point where he's capable, I think he can be excited about that. I think Derrick Queen is, in the way I talked about VJ Edgecombe, I think he's a guy that I think ideally, if this was 20 years ago, he comes back and, irons out some of his kinks and shows the NBA scouts that he is capable of hitting threes, and he is a little more explosive than we thought he was, and he can be a defensive force. But I think I put him on my sure thing team because I think his feel for the game is enough for me to believe in him. I think you just watch him, and he's a guy that's played a lot of basketball in his life, but understands where his teammates are and how to put the ball in the hole. And I don't know. I've loved watching him play, and I found myself like Maryland's a team that's like kind of a trendy pick to go far in this tournament, and Derrick Queen's the big reason why.
Derrick Queen, dude. Marcus Morris was on the Selection Sunday show with Yahoo Sports, and I forget if we said it during the show, but he compared Derrick Queen to DeMarcus Cousins, like a slightly smaller version of Boogie, and I thought it was a really good comp because with Boogie, ball handling 5, great creator, generating shots from the perimeter, and with Derrick Queen, the comp I had for him was Naz Reid as one of them, or Zach Randolph, and like, it's not often you see a dude who's 6'10", 250, that keeps his handle low to the ground, like low center of gravity, spin moves. He's just got every move on drives to the basket. He moves like a guard in a true big man's body. And the at-rim finishing, like if you're betting on him to figure out the three-point shot, you're betting on the touch. Because, dude, like, how many crazy layups has that guy hit this year, Mark?
Right.
Like, it's amazing the touch he has near the basket.
Yeah, for a guy that's like, I think he's 4 for 28, I think is his 3-point shooting numbers on the season. For a guy that's 4 for 28, it makes no sense, but I trust the shooting. I don't know why.
Yeah.
He's got like a good looking stroke. He's got such great touch around the basket. I think if you showed me his shot and you don't show the rim part of it, and it's just like, you just show his body shooting threes, I'm like, yeah, I'm sure those are going in, right? And then they just don't go in. So I don't know. I trust that he's going to figure it out. But his feel is unbelievable. And I love the kid. I love, he's got a scoring knack, and he's a great teammate. And Maryland's been a fun surprise for me this season in college basketball.
So we get your starting five. Who's your sixth man?
My sixth man is Auburn's sixth man, Tahad Pettiford, who is a kid that this is an example of a player that makes me just, this is why I love college basketball. And I don't pay as much attention to recruiting as I probably should for a guy who covers the sport. I don't know. I've been burned too many times to like be living on these recruiting boards and learning everything about every top 100 kid. I'm like, let's just see what they can do on a college basketball court. So I didn't know a ton about Tahad Pettiford until I watched early in the season, Auburn played Houston, who's also a 1 seed in this tournament. They played Houston in Houston. And for those of you who don't know much about Houston basketball, Houston slows the pace down. Houston plays incredible defense, and Houston wins a ton of games playing that way. They're really, really good at controlling tempo and playing lockdown defense, and it's impossible. You have to move the ball side to side. You have to have a guy who can penetrate into the and beat their guards off the dribble, which is easier said than done. And for about 25 to 30-ish minutes of this game, it was a rock fight. When Auburn, early in the season, Auburn's playing Houston, it's just an absolute rock fight, two great defensive teams. And then Tahad Pettiford comes in the second half and just decides he's just going to be a one-man fast break and just create all sorts of offense. And he had a Houston defense which is one of the best in the country, just running in circles and trying to keep up with him. And he's hitting threes. He's hitting pull up mid range shots like he's making layups. He is getting to the rim and finishing in transition. Now, he's an undersized kid. He's not the biggest kid in the world, but he is an absolute lightning rod. And if you watch Auburn, especially in big games, this kid is a big game player where every time they play a marquee team, which Auburn played a lot of them this year, he balls out. He's there's no shot that he's not comfortable taking and not capable of making. He's just a natural scorer. I do worry about his size a little bit, but if you're doing like the lazy comparison thing of because he's left-handed, you know, I get like the Brandon Jennings feel watching him where I'm like, yeah, you're small and left-handed, but like you can score from anywhere on the court. And you're just a joy to watch. Like I watched Tahad Pettiford play basketball and I'm like, I'm having a great time. I'll say it in an empty room, KOC. I'm just like sitting on my couch and I'll just say out loud, I'm having a great time right now. So much to play.
I would have bet $100 that your comp for him would have been Mike Conley.
Oh, Mike Conley,
your old teammate. Yeah, because he's got the offhand floater. Like Conley's the dude. Right, yes, that's what I'm saying. That's like right. Conley, lefty, undersized shooter, but then he's got like this amazing right-handed floater. That's what Pettiford has. Like anytime I think of him, like, is this dude Conley? Are you just not allowed to compare players to your former Ohio State teammates?
Maybe that's it. It's too close to home. I think he's more of a natural scorer than Mike too. Like he wants to put the ball in the basket. This Auburn team is he's their sixth man, and he's been their best player at many times throughout the season. Now Jani Broome is the guy who is one SEC player of the year, might win national player of the year depending on how people see him versus Cooper Flagg. But Tahad Pettiford is the singular talent when you watch Auburn and you're thinking about the next level. He's the guy that jumps out to you almost immediately. I can't get enough of watching him play. Like Auburn's been losing a lot down the stretch, and they're kind of the one seed, even though they're the number one overall seed in this tournament. They're the one seed that's on the shakiest ground right now entering the tournament.
They lost three of the last four games, right?
Yeah, three of four. So like I'm worried they're gonna get bounced early, but I hope they don't because I want to watch Tahad Pettiford play more, man. He's that much fun.
He's a hell of a lot of fun. And like you said, Jani Broome, he's their upperclassman. He's, star of the team. But Pettiford, I think, is their best player in certain moments, best creator, and definitely their best NBA draft prospect. So, Mark, we got your team. Pettiford as there a sixth man rounding out the roster. VJ Edgecombe and Jace Richardson in the backcourt. Con Knipple and Cooper Flagg at the forward spots. And then Derek Queen as a five out of Maryland. I like your lock squad. I like this group.
I'm winning a lot of games.
You're winning the whole tournament by an average margin of victory of what, 40?
I think so. I think we are. Yeah.
and your roster will definitely beat my gambles roster, which we'll talk about in a minute. Do you think you have what it takes to create a bracket that'll beat me in this year's NCAA tournament? Give it your best shot. Compete against me and the rest of the Yahoo Sports crew in this year's Bracket Challenge. Sign-up links are in this show's episode notes on YouTube or in your podcast app. And while you're at it, compete in Yahoo Sports Bracket Mayhem. Turn your brackets into $50,000 with the Yahoo Sports Bracket Mayhem. All right, Mark, before we get to my gamble team for our March Madness prospect to watch, I got to ask you, Dylan Harper, Ace Bailey, we are not going to see them this month. From an NBA perspective, some people are wondering, hey, is there something to like read into here with the fact these two potential top three picks, Harper projected number two by virtually everybody, Bailey number three on a lot of people's boards. Is there something to read into here that the fact these two kids could not lead their team to even a 16 seed? Like, they're not in the tournament at all.
Yeah.
Like what are your thoughts on that?
They weren't even close. They weren't even on the bubble. They weren't even close to the bubble. I will say, like, Rutgers roster was not good. Like, the rest of the team is just not good. And that's obviously a problem. I think for me, it's maybe a little too much expectations on those two guys to carry a team like that. Now, I do think Dylan especially was awesome this year. I think he was every bit as good as I was hoping he would be. Ace was more up and down, and like you obviously see the physical tools. He's a great shooter, and tall and lanky, and there's a lot to love about him. But I think he was a little more of a roller coaster, and whereas Dylan was the steady force for them. But how can you not? How can you? This is unprecedented. There's never been two guys on the same team that are going to be maybe the second and third at the very least. I assume it's a lock that they're both going to go in the top five, right? And to have two of those guys on one team, and never mind making the NCAA tournament, they didn't even sniff the NCAA tournament. That is a notable thing. I won't lie. That's something that I just go, that's interesting. You know, like, I don't think that disqualifies him. I think for me, Dylan Harper is very obviously the second best prospect behind Cooper Flagg. And, you know, I think you take him too, and you trust that he's got all the tools. And, you know, if you actually watch the games, I don't think very rarely would you watch Rutgers. In fact, I don't think it happened once this year where I was watching Rutgers and I was like, yeah, Rutgers might be down 15. But honestly, this all falls on Dylan Harper's shoulders. He's not doing enough for them right now. Like, I never had that thought.
Ace, sometimes you might say that about Ace, right? You might think about it.
Yeah, like Ace, every so often you would, but then you know the next night he might score 30 and you know hit six threes or something. You're like, yeah, this kid's unbelievable. So, it was a disappointing season. I thought Rutgers was going to be a team that I would talk about a lot. And I just didn't. And then like halfway through the season, I realized they're just irrelevant to the college basketball landscape, and they never really did become relevant. And that's kind of a bummer. And it does feel like, in 10 years, you're going to look back, maybe it won't even be 10 years. People will look back at like the picture you're showing right now, and you'll be like, what is that, a Photoshop? Is that AI? That Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper were on the same team in college? What? They played at Rutgers?
I mean, it is crazy they weren't better. They were just completely irrelevant from a college basketball perspective, as you said. And from the NBA perspective, they're going to be incredibly relevant. They're going to be fixtures of the conversation for where they get drafted and, you know, who the non-Cooper prizes are come draft lottery time. And we'll see. I think Dylan Harper is as close to a lock to go number two as it gets. Bailey at three, I'm not so certain that he'll for sure be number three. And that's where this month, some of those guys, especially VJ Edgecombe, like maybe he could work himself into that conversation. There's guys who I think could steal that number three spot from him. So maybe some of the guys on my roster could be in that conversation too. So let's move on to my gamble team. These are the guys that I'm not certain on. I like aspects of their games. I have questions about other aspects of their game. So we'll start out with my point guard, Jeremiah Fears from point guard. He's at Oklahoma this year. He's had some great clutch moments. He had early in the season an and-one game-winning three-pointer against Michigan, top 25 team at the time. Fears, 17 points per game, 6'4" guard. There's a lot to like with his creation ability. I got Jamal Murray and Jordan Poole as two comps for him in my draft guide coming out next week. But the questions with him is, what level does he reach as a shooter? 27% from three this year in college, even though he's a good touch player from the free throw line at 84%. Decision-making as a passer has nearly as many turnovers as he does assist. Forcing shots sometimes. Passes aren't always totally accurate. Is he a point guard or more just as an undersized two? So there's questions with him. But there's also those moments where you're like, oh my God, this guy is an absolute baller. The moments against Michigan, he's had some other big shots. Even in the loss against Kentucky, they're down. What were they down, Mark? 10 points with a minute left?
Yeah.
And like he's getting like big shot, steal, big layup, you know, another steal. Like it was crazy what Fears did down the stretch of that game.
Yeah, he's an interesting one because it depends on what game you're watching of him. If you catch him on the right nights, you're like, how is this kid not an obvious top 10 player, not top 10 pick in the draft? You catch him on other nights, you're like, how is he even considering going to the NBA? You know, he had a couple games where he's like 1-for-11 or 3-for-10 or whatever else. You can't, like you said, he's capable of knocking down threes. You don't want to leave him wide open and dare him to shoot necessarily, but shooting is a concern, and he can throw up a lot of bricks, and he's comfortable doing it. And I think that's one of the things with him too. He's a very confident kid in ways that maybe you would hope he wouldn't be confident and would be a little bit, you know, more reserved. But yeah, I mean, Oklahoma, their whole season kind of hinges on how good he is, you know? So like, I think part of it might just be the role that he's playing, and Porter Moser definitely turns to him and is like, we need a ton out of you every single night, Jeremiah, or else we have no chance of winning. Oklahoma went, I think it was 13-0 in non-conference, and then they got into the SEC play and they just started losing like crazy because the SEC is so strong and so deep. So yeah, he's the guy for them. And I think with that comes, you know, a lot of turnovers at times, a lot of poor decisions, some shot selection issues for sure. He would be a guy, if you want to be optimistic about him though, you would say, you know, if you want to create a masterpiece, you got to spill some paint along the way, you know, KOC, that's what you might say about him. He's got the physical tools. I do think he's got a great feel for the game. But you know, there are definitely a lot of very serious concerns with him. And, I do wonder if he goes to an NBA, if when he's drafted and he goes to an NBA team, obviously the NBA is not going to be like Oklahoma is, where Oklahoma's like, you're our only guy, go do everything for us. You know, like they're going to be like, maybe stop throwing the ball into the third row, Jeremiah. Maybe stop breaking threes when, you know, it's pretty obviously not your night. But yeah, depending on which version of him shows up, you know, they play who in the first round? They're in the 8-9 game. They got the
UConn.
They're UConn, right? That's right. Oklahoma
and it's a lot of eyeballs. A lot of
there
eyeballs.
Will be a lot of eyeballs in that game.
UConn back to back, and now they're in 8.
And I think that'll be a great game. And I think you know, hopefully he shows out for it. But I'm with you. I think you know, there's a good version of him and a bad version of him. And I think you know, you gotta weigh each side if you're gonna be a team that picks him.
Well, I mean, I'm excited for that matchup because UConn, like, this is the matchup for Jeremiah Fears actually to thrive. They have the 94th ranked defensive rating according to Ken Palm. Their perimeter defense is not great over at UConn this year. This is not the UConn teams from the last 2 years. And so for Jeremiah Fears, it's a real opportunity for him to show out in the opening round. You mentioned, like, how with him, it's sometimes one game you watch him, how is he not in the top five? Other games you watch him, why is he even considering going into the draft? My next guy, I think, falls into that same bucket. Trey Johnson from Texas. They are on the bubble as an 11 seed. Trey Johnson, last week, he has an 0-for-14 game against Oklahoma. 0-for-14 in a game. But then there's these other games where, like, he's had 39 against Arkansas a couple weeks ago. He had 32 against Kentucky, where, like, some tough opponents. Trey Johnson, absolute bucket getter. Reminds me a little bit of Tyler Hero. Can shoot off a movement. Super silky, smooth ball handler. He off ball, like, you know, I said earlier, Jace Richardson, like, one of my comps for him is Rip Hamilton. I think you could argue the same thing for Trey Johnson with just the way he moves off the screens. And, you know, in that 0-for-14 game, part of that is shot selection with what he's asked to do in that Texas offense, which really isn't great outside of him. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Mark, what you think about the other stuff from him, because like in that game, he was playmaking. He ripped down 6 rebounds from the guard spot. Like, what do you think about Trey Johnson's other stuff aside from the scoring?
Like, what I see from him, I don't think he cares about the other stuff quite as much.
In that game, he did some other stuff though. He did like some of it.
Yeah. Like, he can do it. Like, he's obviously a great athlete. Like, he's a basketball player. And he's willing to help the team where he can. But he is the number one guy. I mean, I didn't really have to think about it, KOC, because I'm not sure I've ever really seen a guy like him emerge or start his career in the way he did. So Texas played Ohio State the very first game, my alma mater. They played Ohio State, and I got a great look at Trey Johnson out of the gate. And I mean, within the first like 4 minutes, I was like, this kid is just a gunner. He's a gunner. Now, I will say, he scores a lot. Like, he takes a lot of crazy shots, but he makes a lot of crazy shots. And every time I watched him throughout the season, he was the number one guy maybe that I've ever seen in college basketball that's just like so singular focused on just being a bucket, and all he wants to do is score. Now, a couple caveats with that. Like you said, that doesn't mean that's all he can do. A lot of it was that was his role on Texas, because Texas is a poorly coached team. They do not have a very cohesive offense. They do not run great offense at all. They have some decent pieces, but it is a disjointed mess watching the Texas offense. And a lot of times it is Trey Johnson just like being asked to play hero ball, and he's very comfortable doing it. So a lot of it was that. But, you know, also I do think that that's just kind of what his approach to the game is like, the scoreboard only keeps score of one thing, and that's points, and I'm out here to get them. And to be a freshman in what might be the greatest single season of one conference in the history of college basketball. I'm talking about the SEC this year, and to average 20 points a game in that league, that just speaks to the talent that he has. But yeah, I'm worried about, like, I don't know how locked in he is defensively. I don't know, you know, like he can be a little bit of a creator, but I think that's more of just like, you know, the gravity that he has as a guy who's going to shoot, or the guy that can score from anywhere on the floor, and defenses get scared of that, because I don't even know what the opposing team scouting report would be for him. Because like, he literally will shoot any shot there is to be shot, and he'll make them more often than not. So I actually, despite what it might sound like, I like him a lot. I like him as a prospect a lot, because like I said, like at the end of the day, they only keep score for one reason, and it's points. And if you're known for doing one thing and it's scoring the basketball, that's a pretty valuable thing to be your one thing. But yeah, there are definitely a lot of concerns, and I haven't seen a ton of him this year where, you know, I get that thought that I got, the thought that I got on opening night of like, this guy is a bucket, and that's pretty much just what he is. I haven't seen much to make me walk back that thinking, if that makes sense.
No, I think it's totally accurate, and that's going to be the big question with him. And I do think if they do win that bubble game against Xavier, they got Illinois in the opening round matchup, correct?
Like Illinois, round, yeah.
Like, there's a chance they could get through Illinois. And so I do have a prospect from Illinois as the next guy on my roster at the small forward spot. I got Will Riley, a freshman at Illinois. I got him at the small forward spot. He's 6'8", came off the bench for most of the season, started only 7 games this year, 12.5 points per game, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 32% from 3. That's really the biggest question with him is like, you need to be able to shoot the ball at the as an off-ball guy in the NBA. 32% from 3, only 72% from the free throw line for Illinois this year. The shot looks, you know, a bit rigid to me in spot up situations. He's not great off the dribble. The thing with Will Riley that I look at and I'm like, dude, like, this guy has a ton of potential is the creation. It's the playmaking. Like, he makes these crazy like scoop passes, the cutting bigs, he can make kickouts, he throws lobs. And so you're talking about a dude who's 6'8", who flashes some shooting ability, who projects as a versatile defender, and he can pass and do a little bit off the dribble. So I'm really split on Will Riley. What do you think about him, Titus?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. You kind of took all the words out of my mouth. I think, you know, his body could use a little bulking up. I think he gets pushed around a little bit. I think the idea of him, I think for most of this season, he's one of those guys that I would say the idea of him is bigger than the actual reality of him, which is to say that, like, he is a name and a player that, like, when I see him on the roster, when I see him check into the game, I get very excited about that, and I get excited about the idea of Illinois being great because of him. And they obviously have a bunch of other talented players. Jakachonis is probably going to be a lottery pick as well, but I don't think he fully has materialized that potential throughout the season. There have been moments, he's had great games here and there. But there's a lot of work to be done, and Illinois has been a very, very up and down team. And I think, you know, it's not all Will Riley. I think, like, the whole team, it's like kind of their mindset. They shoot a ton of threes. They're a very weird team because they're trying to adopt modern basketball and be a team that just shoots a ton of threes. Like, seemingly every team at every level does now, but they just don't make them. And it gets very frustrating watching that team play because, you know, like, that's not how it works. I think 3 is worth more than 2 only if the 3 goes in. If the 3 doesn't go in, it's not worth more than the 2. So, you know, I think, like, at times you watch Will Riley and this Illinois team and they can be frustrating, but they're a team I can't quit. You know, like, Illinois lost by 40 to Duke, or like, not too long ago. Duke beats them by 40 in Madison Square Garden, literally the worst loss in the history of the program. And they turn around and they beat Michigan by 20 on the road, and they're just so up and down. And I think, like, he's kind of the same thing. I think he, as a player, is what this Illinois team is for me.
Yeah. I mean, Jakachonis, you mentioned him. He's their potential lottery pick at the point guard spot. He's another guy, like, love him or hate him, Jakachonis, like on one hand, step back threes, the creation, the creativity. But then there's other moments where it's like, why are you making that pass? What are you forcing that for? He has 9 games this season with more turnovers than made shots. Like, it's just sometimes frustrating. But
you know what it might be? I'll say this about him and Will Riley and maybe the whole Illinois team. It feels at times like they're trying to put stuff on tape for scouts rather than win the basketball game. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like,
it really
does. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like they're trying to like demonstrate skills they have. So if the scouts are watching, they'll be like, oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, like, you missed the shot, but I love that. I love the thought that you know, Will Riley, I love the pick and pop action there, Will Riley. I know you bricked it, but like, good action, you know, like that. They think that that's what people, when really, like, I'm watching and I'm like, what are you doing? Win the basketball game, you know?
It does feel like that sometimes with them. And we'll see. I mean, they'll get Texas or Xavier in the opening round matchup. Hopefully they advance so we can see a lot more games. But at the same time, I'm not arguing if we get to see Trey Johnson get a lot more of opportunity. So, at the forward spot, Asa Newell from Georgia. He's a forward, a little undersized as a big, even though he's listed at 6'11". To me, he looks more like 6'9". The at-rim finishing, no doubts about him. He flashes some jumper potential. He's a versatile defender. He hustles. There's no doubts about those qualities of his game. Sometimes I feel like his defense, you know, he commits a lot of fouls. Sometimes he's out of position. The passing ability is, you know, not so great as a creator for him. I feel like there's a chance he's just going to be a solid player, but then other times you see, maybe he should be a lottery pick. I'm split on him, Mark. I really don't have a great feel of where to put him in my rankings yet. So I'm hoping we see Georgia play a lot more games this year.
Maybe it's because of the hair and because he's left-handed and I'm just lazy, but, this is going to sound like an insult to NBA people, and it's going to be a compliment to college basketball people. I get like Marvin Bagley vibes sometimes watching him, where he's a force down low. He is very springy. He can finish around the rim. He's got like a great body movement. He's got a great feel for his body. But like you said, there are questions about his shooting. There's questions about his passing. There's questions, even rebounding. I feel like, you know, Bagley, the Bagley compares, like, Bagley was a great rebounder in college. Like, Bagley would go get everything. For how big he supposedly is and for how good he is around the basket, like, he doesn't go grab every board like I would like him to. He's definitely a raw prospect. Like, raw is the word that comes to mind. Like, you see the obvious potential, but it's just not fully there yet. And Georgia's having a better year than I expected, and he's had a great year, and he's a great college basketball player, but I don't know what individual skills I look at with him and I'm like, yeah, that's, you're going to be dominant at the NBA level with that, you know?
It's just a lot of ifs. It's if.
Yeah.
With him. And like, maybe he checks enough of those boxes, but it's just a lot of big ifs for me where it's like, where would I want to take this guy? I think if you're a team willing to absorb risk and stay patient, then, you know, you're probably going to have him in your lottery. But if you're a team, you need to be a bit more conservative, you probably bump him down to the 20s or something like that. So that's 4 of my 5 right now, my starting 5. For the center spot, Alex Condon from Florida, played rugby growing up. He's an Aussie. You can see the way he plays with his energy. No doubts about the motor and all that. He's a good playmaker as well from the center spot. I have Isaiah Hartenstein as the comparison for him in the draft guide. So that's like a real compliment to him. But if you're drafting him in the first round, the questions I have in my mind are, you have this guy, you're going to see him for Florida. They're a 1 seed. You're going to see him taking some threes, but he's only 62% from the free throw line, only 32% from three. How real is his jumper when you project it out forward? And then also size. Like, I'm comparing him to Hartenstein, but he's 2-3 inches taller. He's a lot heavier. Condon, you know, listed at 6'11", but again, like, this is the thing sometimes with these college measurements. I don't feel like he's actually 6'11". He looks more like 6'9" to me. So that's where, you know, I want to see some of the NBA actual tape come out when we have these real measurements. But for now, great college player. Part of the reason why Florida is a 1 seed. No doubts about that. But from an NBA perspective, I do have some questions about how real it'll all be and how much it'll translate.
Yeah, I mean, Florida is the hottest team probably in the country right now. If you ask me, I think Duke and Florida are 1 and 2, 1A, 1B, I should say, in terms of like the teams that I would be terrified to play if I was in this bracket. And the guard play of Florida is getting all the attention. You know, Walter Clayton and Elijah Martin and Will Richard. They got these three guards that all of them
Clayton's score. Clayton's so good, dude.
He's nasty. And everybody focuses on the guards, but I think what's really made Florida more like an actual viable national title contender is Condon. I think Condon makes the difference for them because guards, as good as those guards are, and I don't mean to downplay how good Walter Clayton is, but like there are a lot of great guards in the country. There just aren't a lot of teams that have those great guards surrounded by a guy like, or surrounding a guy like Condon, who is a playmaker, like you said. I love his passing ability. I love his feel and his touch around the rim. Like, he's been a guy that has been a second, third, fourth fiddle at times for Florida throughout the year. But the Alabama game, one of the last games of the regular season, Florida goes to Bama, and I think that was when they sort of put the country on notice. They've had a great season all year. They started 13-0, were wrecking everybody. But they played a pretty easy non-conference schedule, and there was always a little bit of doubt with them as the season wore on. Florida loses at Georgia. It felt like they squandered their chance to get a one seed in that moment. They had this big matchup with Alabama towards the end of the year, and Bama's in contention for a one seed. Florida's still like holding out hope for a one seed. And Alex Condon just dominated this game in a game that, Bama's one of the better teams in the country and has future NBA players as well. And Florida's got all these great players. And I think going into the game, if you ask me to power rank the best players going into this game, I would have had Condon like fifth or sixth in the game, and he was the player of the game. There's a lot to love about him. I think he's a guy that, I know I'm saying the same thing about all these guys, but like, he's a guy that's like, dude, come back next year, please, for the love of God, come back next year. show that you can shoot.
You want a requirement to play 4 years. That's what you want.
I want them all back. But Condon, I think like you bring him back and you let the guards, like, I don't know the decisions that these Florida guards are going to make. I think, I don't even know at this point, like, everybody's eligible to play as long as they want in college basketball. So I don't even know if, even if they're seniors, like they'll probably, some of them might come back anyway, but I think Condon comes back and instead of being like the big man that's kind of fitting in around these guards, he becomes like the guy for Florida. I think that would be awesome for his NBA draft stock, but he shows a great feel for the game. Like you said, high motor. It's really just the shooting and that's pretty much it for me. I'm very, very high on him, and especially like he's gotten better throughout the season, and he's become a guy that I think is I wouldn't be surprised if Florida goes on to win the national championship. I wouldn't be surprised if one of these six games is the quote unquote Alex Condon game, you know, where he's the guy, even though Walter Clayton's the All-American and the guy that gets all the headlines for them.
I think that's well said. I mean, as you said, that game against Bama, 27 points in that was a great game, 99-94 game. Mark Sears had 30 points for Bama that game. Grant Nelson might not be playing for Alabama, pretty pivotal forward for them. How long is he supposed to be out for Alabama, Mark?
I don't know. I don't know what the latest update was. Yeah, he was – I actually don't know. I haven't
– Very questionable, I think, for this weekend, but that's important for Alabama. My sixth man is from that Bama team. He's a starter on Alabama. I have him as a sixth man on my NBA, prospects to watch. Mark Sears. Mark Sears, you probably know the name from last year. Tiny guard. He's under 6 feet. Great shot creator, super fluid with the ball, half spins, step backs, versatile shooter as well. This year for Alabama, he goes back to school this year, improved playmaking, I'd say, but the shooting has not been quite the same for him this season. Last year, he shot 43.6% from three. This year, way down to 33.8% from three. And the reason why that's a bit alarming to me is because last year at a higher volume was really his first real year where he was just an elite shooter. This is closer to his career averages in college. So, questions about like how real is his jumper, as a smaller guy, sometimes it's harder to get your shot off, especially moving forward in the NBA. So with Mark Sears, tiny guard, you're always going to be attacked defensively. Playmaking is good, but not great. And so the shooting really needs to be great for him. So I had Mark Sears as the first rounder last year. Right now, I don't. you know, I want to love him, Mark. I want to love Mark Sears again. Is this the month where I'm going to fall in love again, or is Alabama going to disappoint me?
I don't know. Alabama as a team, like you said about Sears, like his shooting's regressed. I think Alabama is a team that spams, for lack of a better word, the 3-point shot. That's their whole thing.
It's all they do. They don't take mid-range ever.
They refuse to take mid-range, which I understand. I don't want to come across as a dinosaur and be champion in the mid-range shot. But there are times where, like I said earlier about Illinois, like three is only worth more than two if the three goes in. If you continue to miss the three, then that is not the good shot. You need to get points on the board, and you'll watch.
Brandon Miller. Like, this is what happened with Brandon Miller. Yes. Like, granted, he goes number two to Charlotte, but Brandon Miller in high school was a mid-range assassin, and he never took mid-range ever for Alabama. It just was not part of the shot diet for him. It was rim and threes, and that's it.
KOC, I was losing my mind when Brandon Miller was playing San Diego State, and San Diego State was just running out to the 3-point line, letting them drive by them because they had a rim protector behind him, and they knew he would contest all the shots at the rim, and Bama would just not take any mid-range shot. They were wide open. They just wouldn't take them. I think the shooting for Bama as a whole has taken a nosedive this season. They're still capable. They're still dangerous. They're obviously a 2-seed for a reason, but Sears, as far as an NBA prospect, like you said, he's undersized. I think he's a guy that does have to have a ball in his hands at all times to make things happen. And more often than not, he does make things happen. He's very good. But at the same time, I kind of get frustrated with how passive he can be. And he can have monster games and he can take over games. But there are other times where he just completely disappears. Now, they played Illinois earlier in the season. Mark Sears got benched down the stretch, scored 0 points. Bama put up 100 and beat Illinois. And I don't know. That's like something that you can't unsee. At least I can't. Like, I was watching that game and I was just like, if you really are the best player, one of the best players in the country and a future NBA point guard, like, how is this happening? How are you scoring 0 points and being benched and all that? And I don't know if he was sick, he was injured. I don't know if he was having a bad day. I don't know what was going on. It was very concerning, but it wasn't just that one game. There are a lot of moments throughout the season where you would like to see Mark Sears be a little bit more assertive. And I guess like my complaint with him and with Alabama as a whole is at times it feels like they're not playing basketball. They're just running basketball drills during a basketball game. And it's like they're not. And what I mean by that is like there's no concept of time and score. There's no flow within the game. Like it's just that they're running like the ball screen type stuff that they just practiced over and over and over and over. And it goes back to like they love to shoot threes. And I get so frustrated watching. They are the number one most frustrating team for me to watch, I think, because they should be so good. And yet there are times where it's just like, you guys realize you're down 12 right now. Why are you doing XYZ when you should be doing this? And it's because they're only built to do one thing and do that. And I guess that's my frustration with both Bama, but then, you know, Sears is the leader of that team. And it can be frustrating watching him. I almost feel like he has a feel for the game in the sense of like when you're asking him to come off ball screens and pick the right tempo and find the space to, you know, either draw a defender and kick or finish with a little floater or hit a jump shot or whatever. He's really good at that. He doesn't have a feel for like, you know, like I said, like the team's not hitting threes and like, or this guy is hot. Let's get this guy the ball or stuff like that. I don't know how else to describe it. There are times I watch Bama and I'm like, are you guys playing basketball or are you just running drills during a game? And that's really the only way I can describe Alabama when they're at their worst. So
I don't sometimes know. See, you can take that layups and threes philosophy to the extremes. Like you see that sometimes with those Maury Rockets in the past where it was like, okay, can we take a mid-range here instead of 0 for 27 down the stretch?
27. I will say the one thing helping Sears is that he's left-handed and looks a little bit like Jalen Brunson.
He does. He does.
No, I'm like, if I'm Mark Sears' agent, I just keep telling everybody that he's the next Jalen Brunson.
I mean, look, like Brunson undersized, but even Brunson is bigger than Mark Sears. So like, you got a lot of work to do to be end up like Jalen Brunson. So that's my team. We got Jeremiah Fierce and Trey Johnson in the backcourt, Will Riley and Asa Newell at the forward spots, Alex Condon at the five, and then Mark Sears as a sixth man. And if you stack up our rosters against each other, you're winning 100 out of 100 matchups with your team locks versus team gambles. But I like our teams, Mark. I think our teams look good. These are players that people should know.
I think so, yeah. And a lot of these guys are on 8-9 and in 8-9 games, which is important because those are going to be the most competitive, most fun games to watch. And yeah, even like Jace Richardson, who's playing a 15 seed, and we assume he's going to beat Bryant. Whoever comes out of that Marquette New Mexico game, New Mexico has Donovan Dent, who's a great scorer and a ton of fun to watch, and Marquette has Cam Jones, who's a do everything guy and got a triple double for Marquette, first one since Dwayne Wade was there. In the second round matchup, immediately you're going to see Jace Richardson in terms of like individual head to head type situations. I think all these guys are going to have a bright spotlight on them, and they're going to be fun to watch. So I'm excited for it, KOC. I appreciate you having me on. This was so much fun. We need to do this more often.
Absolutely, Mark. Appreciate you joining me so much. Where can everybody find your stuff?
I'm basically on every show Barstool has, it seems like. I do the Mark Titus show. Great name, by the way, if I may say so. Where I talk about college basketball. I love college basketball. I'm a college basketball sicko, and I'll be doing live streams every night. So if you're someone that you're falling in love with the March Madness action and you want someone, to talk about it with after the games, I'm going to be going live every night on the Mark Titus show after March Madness games. I'm also on Mostly Sports every morning live and the Yak every afternoon live. I don't know. I'm just in the Barstoolverse now, man. I just do it all, I guess. Whatever they ask of me.
Love it. You're crushing it, Mark. Appreciate it, man. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, KOC.
Up next, we have Marcus Morris talking some NBA. Joining me now is Marcus Morris, NBA veteran, now dipping his toes in sports media. What's up, Marcus?
Yes, sir. What's up, my guy? Thanks for having me, brother.
Appreciate it, man. Let's talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder. They're the number one seed in the Western Conference right now. All the talk across sports media right now is like, hey, OKC, Brian Windhorst goes on ESPN, says teams down low and the standings feel like they can knock them off. I'm curious about your thoughts with all the different teams you've played on throughout your NBA career. Is this warranted for teams to feel like they can knock off OKC as young as they are, or not so much considering how dominant they've been this entire regular season?
To be honest, yeah, I think it's just one of those things where, you don't have that veteran presence. You don't have that like background of getting to the championship, right? You have a whole new team that's probably maybe younger than some college teams, yeah. About like right there, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just like, quite frank, you would just be like, man, no, I don't think that they're like just ready to win. And if I was a more mature team, a veteran team that's been there, I think, I would take my chances with playing OKC, even though, Shai, MVP, great player, talented, generational guy, love his footwork, love what he's been doing thus far. But if I'm a veteran team, if I'm one of them lower teams aspiring to play in.
Well, who? Who's best equipped to beat them then?
I like the Clippers, man. I think we talked about that earlier. Like, if they get a draw like OKC with a healthy Kawhi Leonard, I think they got a shot at beating them just because of the experience.
Healthy,
right?
Kawhi, though, Marcus. Like, yeah. You played with the Clippers for 4 years.
Yeah.
He went out early in two of those. He missed the entire season in one of them. The only time he was healthy the whole time was the bubble,
right,
when there was a whole break. Like, right. I love Kawhi. I'm sure you love Kawhi, but healthy Kawhi, I don't know if you can trust that.
Yeah. So, we got to cross our fingers with that one. We'll be optimistic and say he will be, right? Mm-hmm. And, he's been working hard. And if he does, that's a big if. But if he does, I think I would take OKC if I'm there, just on the strength of that.
And that would be a first round series too. Yeah. So like Kawhi, like maybe like you might say he's not healthy for the West Finals, right. But first round would be a bit different there.
Exactly.
Norm Powell's had an amazing year, was arguably an all-star. Maybe he would have been a replacement if, other guys had sat out an all-star weekend.
Right.
So the Clippers are awesome for sure. But I feel like through this whole process, like Windy, like that rant by Windy, I know he's reporting what people are saying on these lower seeded teams. But I also feel like because OKC's so young, they're just getting disrespected there. They have the MVP and SGA, who's right. unstoppable. And with SGA, all anybody ever talks about is like, oh, he grifts fouls. He's baiting fouls. It's like, no, nobody can stay in front right. of this dude.
True. That's
he's unbelievable.
True. No, it's very true. But at the same time, he's not your typical superstar, right? He shoots the mid-range, shoots the three. He's not super
at an
athletic.
Elite level.
Very, very
over
elite. 50%. I can't lie to like what he's done without like having to be super athletic, right? Having to like even shoot spot up threes, like just the in between game to get into the rim of different fakes. I love his short step. That's what I call it. It's the Luka Doncic step. If you just take a look at it, he's mastered that to where he's not overstepping. He changed directions quick. His mid range is elite. But who else is proven?
Jalen Williams needs to prove something. Like he fell off last year in the postseason.
I'm just saying, is he proven yet?
He's not yet. He needs to prove it.
So now, you know what SGA is going to get. Like, you know what he's going to do. What's next after that?
It's everything else. Chet last year in the postseason did not play the way he did during his rookie year. Jalen Williams didn't either. I just think with OKC, the one difference between this year and last year, Isaiah Hartenstein.
Yeah.
Alex Caruso, they addressed the need for size. They can play with two bigs with Chet and Hartenstein now. Caruso, another wing defender. They have the number one defensive rating by far in the NBA. And they started the year shooting the three pretty poor. So, right. like, at one point, I'm like, can they shoot well enough right. in the postseason? You know, sag off of Caruso, sag off of Dort.
Exactly.
The numbers are good, but lower volume. But they're number one in three-point percentage in the 2025 calendar year. So with OKC, my confidence is increasing in them.
Right.
But ultimately, it comes down to Jalen Williams
yeah.
or Chet Holmgren being the number
I would
two.
Say the others yes. has to be like at an elite level. But to your point, you're right. They did add some extra veterans that will help the team with experience. Mm-hmm. So that is the difference between them and last year, right? They added guys that actually fit the mold, that fits the team. So, I mean, it's just a few teams that I would like, that I would say if they matched up with, it could be scary for them.
Phoenix? No.
Come on, you always have no. to give Phoenix a chance. They got Kevin Durant.
OKC?
You have to.
No chance.
You have to.
No chance.
Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant.
Maybe a chance
Devin
to win
Booker.
A game.
Nah, I mean, I just that's just one of those teams that's it's a question mark around the regular season, right? They always have a chance with those three on the roster. Always. No matter what team. And you know what Minnesota did to them last year was a little, you know, it was a little funky. I wasn't a fan of that. But whenever you have guys like that that's capable of doing what they can do, Kevin Durant, the best scorer ever.
Sure.
You know, you got Devin Booker. And, you know, it's been a little bumpy, but playoffs can change a lot of things.
They need a lot to get into the postseason.
A ton.
We talked about the Clippers as the team that you feel is most equipped to beat OKC. They lose.
I didn't say they was the most equipped. I said that they can.
They can.
They
Who
can.
Is the most equipped then?
The LA Lakers.
The Lakers.
I'm going to go with the Lakers.
The Lakers.
Whenever you have LeBron James and Luka Doncic as your primary ball handlers and AR as a third option, I love that because now you can put the ball in each of those guys' hands. I felt as though, and I said this to you earlier, I felt this Anthony Davis was in LeBron's way. You know what I mean? Because LeBron's really a four now. And that's the position that Anthony Davis wanted to play. He was always on a box. He wasn't really stretching the three that well. Now you add another guard, not even just another guard. Let's just make that clear. You had top five guard in the NBA.
Top five player.
That can get it from anywhere. And he's a matchup nightmare. When 77 walk in the building, OKC, Minnesota, Phoenix, Clippers, they dread seeing him. And now he got 2-3 on his back, right with him. And what does that equal to?
100.
Okay, listen to this. Man, hey.
I remember some math from college, man.
Listen to this.
A little bit.
Hey,
usually
anytime,
I just use a calculator on my
equal
phone.
To 100, anytime it equal to 100, listen. Hey, man, you got a problem. So if LeBron and Luka stays healthy, I feel like that's
the I think the Lakers definitely have a shot,
yeah.
for sure. I think mm-hmm. it would be an unbelievable series because not only do you have LeBron like shooting threes at over 40%, it's amazing how he's become a knockdown shooter
exactly.
playing off Luka. He can cut, he can screen, he does everything. But their defense has been dominant
yeah.
as well. Your brother, Markieff, got traded there.
Yeah.
What was the reaction between you guys when you found that out?
Crazy story, man. We just so happened to be on the phone late night one day. You know, we've talked a lot. You know what I mean? We talk basketball, we talk sports, we talk our podcast, you know what I'm saying? So we do sports betting a lot, not NBA, but college, you know, NFL. So, you know, we were just going over the games or like nightly thing. He just landed or whatever. And just this particular night, we just was chopping it up about hoop. And I'm like, man, like, how y'all doing over there in Dallas? Like, you think y'all gonna make any trades? And that was crazy because that was the real conversation. I'm like, you think y'all gonna do something? And I'm not gonna tell you who he said was gonna get traded, but he like, yeah, it's going X, Y, and Z. Those guys, they gonna get traded. That's what they looking at. You know, we're looking to upgrade. And for some reason, he just took like a pause and he like, bro, the GM just texted me. I'm like, he just texted you. What did he say? He like, no, this can't be real. And I'm like, what happened? So he told me like, basically, you know, he's been traded. So I'm like, you've been traded. Like, how? Why? To who? Like, why would they even trade you? You're not playing. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, everybody knew the leadership that he brought to Dallas. So it was like, it didn't even make sense, right? So he like, just let me give you a call back. So I'm like, all right, cool. So now I'm sitting there with my wife, and I'm like, damn, they just traded Keith. I think he might retire, actually, because he was telling me, like, man, I can't do this no more. Like, he just bought a house in Dallas, right? So he was just doing that, and he was just like, man, it's just too much at this point. I'm not even playing. It's like I'm almost babysitting at this point. So he was like, I'm done. I don't even care where I'm going to. 3 minutes later, he called me back. And he said, bro, Luka Doncic has just been traded. And I'm like, what the – can I curse?
Yeah, you can
I'm
curse.
Like, what the how is Luka Doncic traded? Like, does that even make sense? So now – when he said the Lakers, I said, you going to the Lakers, right? He said, hell yeah, I'm going to Lakers. And I'm thinking to myself, bro, you know, you might just have won another championship. Like, literally, you really might just have won a championship. And the part about it that I think a lot of people don't see is that Keith and Luka has a really good relationship, like a really good relationship. So I think that they probably noticed that and they wanted, you know what I mean, Luka to feel, you know, to feel better, to go into a new place where you have somebody that's, you know, that's been a teammate. Also, Dorian Finney-Smith, he's been a teammate of him. And then Max Kleber, you know, he's been injured, so I'm really talking about him. I think the dynamic of that really helped, and also Keith played there. So the Lakers really wanted him to come. Brian asked for him to come. So it was like the dynamic, once I sat and back and thought about it, I was like, it actually might help your career now. It might give you a breath of fresh air. We're doing a little media thing with the podcast, so it might actually help, right? And the entire time, I just couldn't put my finger on why the f*** would they trade Luka Doncic.
Have you had any clarity since then?
I didn't. I really don't. And I still, you know, this is no disrespect to any of the players. Like, Anthony Davis is a really good player, really good career. I don't think that match. I just didn't think it matched, you know, up to what Luka has done, like, this far in his career. Such a short career. Of like the scoring tides, the triple doubles, getting to the championship, right? If he had a few beers or whatever that may be. But let me just take you back when I seen Michael Finley take that beer out of his hand. And I know a lot of people might not have looked at that, but as a player, I didn't like how that looked, right? Like, we just won, we celebrate and I have a beer, it's cameras, and you kind of take that away from me. It's like almost you're trying to like hint at something, right? And I did, as a player at that stature, I didn't agree with that. I didn't agree how they kind of tried to paint that picture. So now, fast forward, you kind of painting that picture the entire time that he has a drinking problem, that he's overweight, right? And I don't feel as though that has anything to do with his play. Yes, he was injured. A lot of players get injured all the time. A lot of players take a long time to come back. But his production level is through the roof. So how do you sum up, okay, it's time to trade this guy? Like, how does that come to your mind? And then not only that you trade him to the LA Lakers, a team that you have to see every fucking year, four times a year in the playoffs. So what do you think is about to happen when he goes to the Lakers? You think he's going to be, who you think? He's going to be Luka Doncic 0.20. He's going to kill. He has the best player possibly ever. Now he can see the work ethic. Now you can see what goes into the day and day of being greatness, right? So if I'm Dallas, man, I'm looking at all that. I'm not just looking at trading Luka Doncic. I'm trading Luka Doncic that I still have to see every f-ing year. Now, if you trade him to the East Coast for Jason Tatum, let's say. Now you don't got
different
to see
conference.
Him. Different conference. Yeah. You don't have to see him no more. Like, then I make that makes sense. But now you still have to see this. You have to see this mother four times a year. Are we talking about possibly the best player in the NBA for years to come? Because what he does doesn't need athleticism. He might could do the same thing for 10 more years, literally.
Yeah, I mean, and now LeBron's career could be extended as well. Playing with Luka. I mean, it's I still can't wrap my head around it. It's been over a month now.
I can't.
I still can't believe it actually happened. And obviously, LeBron is out injured right now. Hopefully, you know, he's able to be healthy come playoff time and all that. But Luka playing with this guy, you might see the best version of Luka ever as well. Despite the heights that he's already reached, he still hasn't won an MVP.
Right.
But you could see the best version of Luka ever as well. And so are you surprised? One thing I'm curious about with the Lakers, you say they're best equipped to beat OKC. I assume that means yes or no, they're your pick to go to the finals in the West.
Yes.
They're your pick for the finals.
I like the Lakers.
Part of it's their defense.
Yeah.
And Luka, I feel, even offensively, he's still not at his peak levels yet. Defensively, he's played well cog on what has been an unbelievable defense going back to prior to the deal when AD was sidelined out injured. Right. What is it about this Lakers defense that you feel like is translatable to the playoffs?
The best part about it is they're not really scheming right now. They're just like going into it, let's switch five, let's switch four. They're not scheming. When you put minds of LeBron James comes back and now you're scheming for a team in a seven-game series, right? Okay. They might do this with Luka. They might try this with Luka. Now you have the minds of J.J. Redick and LeBron putting Luka in the best spots. So even if he was a small liability, we'd be able to cover that up just off of thinking the game, right? Scouting the game, seeing things that other teams don't see, putting them in positions where people can cover for him, right? I think that people looking past that, yes, Luka don't, he might not play defense that well, but most superstars don't, right? Most superstars don't play both sides, but most superstars don't average almost a triple-double. Most superstars can't get 50-point triple-doubles and still play both sides of the floor, right? So my thing is the team is well-equipped to be able to cover anything that he has that might be magnified on the defensive end.
I'm curious, as a player, what were your thoughts on Daryl Morey's comments about using AI to assist in making decisions?
Man, listen, I'm going to just say this, and this will be the first time I ever said this. I don't trust Daryl Morey. I just don't trust him. I think he's thinking too far ahead of the way basketball needs to be played. He's trying to do a whole new team. He's trying to bring guys in. He's flipping them in and out, in and out, in and out. Does he even understand the dynamic of being in Philadelphia? What guys you need to play in Philadelphia? Like, understand how the team needs to gel first before you start talking about AI. What does AI do? Like, I understand the effects it can have on other, you know, other spots of maybe the offense, the numbers and things like that, but like telling you what guys you should choose or which guy fits what you're trying to do. What has he won? Like, he hasn't won in so long, right?
He's come close. He came close in Houston. They went to a game seven against the amazing Warriors.
And then what happened to that team the next year?
They blew up.
you tell my guy JH that you're going to do something for him, a guy that you brought from all these teams, and then you don't like the AI tell him not to pay James Harden this amount of money. Like, does the AI tell him to
hire Nick Nurse?
Does AI tell you to get the guy from Miami,
Caleb Martin,
because he played well in the Boston series? He can't shoot the ball. You got three dominant guys that needs the ball in their hand. Why is that the first guy that you go get, right? Like, how did you come up with picking a team? Why do you want to start a brand new team and try to win a championship? I haven't seen any team that has 10 new guys be really good the following year. I don't even know if any team has ever done that. Like, I'm just not a fan of like how he go about choosing players and like flipping players in and out. It's kind of like he's trying to like outsmart the game too much, right? It's like,
I mean, Daryl's had a lot of success. Like with Houston, he built a really great team, an innovative team. With Philly, he's put Embiid, the best team that Embiid's had around him. I think with Daryl.
Is that what James Harden, that James Harden team we were talking about, this team that's there now?
I think that Harden team, yeah.
Did he put Harden, or was it other things around of wanting Harden to come there and knowing that he was going to sign a contract? So basically he put that together because he lied to the players and told them that he was going to give them a certain contract that made them want to come there. And then he gets to Philadelphia, and then it's not the same thing. So I'm just not a fan of like how he moves around the game, right? I'm just not a fan of that. I'm just not a big fan of it.
I think with the AI thing, that's what pissed people off is because with Daryl, it's always been about like, oh, he doesn't value chemistry enough and the human side of things when it comes to constructing a basketball team. It's always too much about the numbers and how things project. So I think that's Daryl's kind of Achilles heel.
Exactly.
And that's something he's going to have to resolve if they continue trying to compete for championship with Joel Embiid. But ultimately, I think the Sixers are in a position where they need to reevaluate everything.
They just did that last year. They reevaluated everything. And
changed the whole roster.
I'm from Philadelphia, so I keep an eye on it, right? Like, I had a chance to play there. I played there last year. Even with myself, I was playing really good basketball, and he traded me for a bag of chips. I'm just like,
what kind of chips?
Lay's, Fritos. It was just like literally a bag of chips. And I'm like, motherfucker. Like what else do I need to do to play on this team, to play well, to gel with Joel, to be a guy that's in the city that's like helping the team?
Yeah, like because you're anti-AI and analytics.
Man, that's the bull I'm talking about. And not only did he trade me, he trades Patrick Beverley, his own guy. You feel what I'm saying? That's playing really well. That's really helped the team when Embiid went down. When Embiid was there, we were top five in the NBA, right? I just like some of the things that I think that he does is like it doesn't have anything to do with basketball. It's like his own values of how he think a team should be constructed or ran or it's mind-boggling. I just don't understand it.
So Philly is way out of the picture right
Philly's
now.
Philly's done.
Done.
Finished.
Done. No
finished.
Chance.
Finito.
Well, this particular
Stick
year
a
right
fork
now.
In them.
They're done.
Done.
I feel like you're glad they're done.
I'm glad. I'm not glad because I really have really good relationships with these dudes. Like, I love Joel. Like, I have really good relationship mm-hmm. with Maxie. Paul George is my guy. Yeah. So it's like.
It's just Daryl in particular.
Like, Daryl, like, yeah, because even with me wanting to go, I wanted to go to Philly. I'm like, bro, I can help you guys. I can help Paul George. I can, you know what I'm saying? I can be one of the leaders on the team. And this dude just like, it's just something about him, man. Even my rookie year, he sent me to the G League for no reason. I couldn't understand that. So I'm still back 10 years ago, like not understanding what the Daryl Morey is trying to do. Like, I just don't understand.
G League can be valuable.
Man,
it can be.
That,
it can
man,
be.
I was a guy. I didn't even know.
Yeah, you were a lottery pick, right? Or mid first at least, right?
Yeah, lottery, yeah. But you know, who's counting?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Last thing here with the Eastern Conference, Philly out of the picture. Cleveland number one seed, Boston number two seed, Knicks three.
Yep.
Who's your current pick in the East to go to the finals?
I got to go with Boston. I'm going to keep going with Boston. I got the best player in the league in Jason Tatum, best duo in the league with those two guys. Big fan of it. Brad Stevens, big fan, guru. Like they're just set up to win championships, right? You got Cleveland. Cleveland's playing really well. I love Cleveland. Big fan of Cleveland.
Why Boston over Cleveland then?
I think
you were with Cleveland last year, right?
Yeah.
So you saw, obviously you weren't there with Kenny Atkinson, but you were there with Bickerstaff.
Yeah.
So they've changed their system dramatically. They're totally different this year. Why Boston over Cleveland still despite that?
Just experience. Been there, done it. You know what I'm saying? Guys like Jason Tatum and getting to the Eastern Conference Finals since he was a rookie, right? Like those lights are just different. And until you actually get there, see how it is to lose, to win, they just haven't done it with Cleveland. I love Kenny Atkinson. I love the addition. I think that definitely takes us all over the top. But even with JB was a hell of a coach. I think it's just his time just ran out with those guys. But you see what he's doing in Detroit, and I just got to shout him out because Detroit is playing excellent basketball. And for a guy to come and—
He had a great rant over the weekend,
man,
after facing OKC.
For sure. And he was right, though. He was right. Like, Detroit is coming around. Like, give him some f***ing respect. You know what I'm saying? And what he's done— And I'm going to get back to Cleveland. What he's done by leaving Cleveland the way he did, right? They got further than they've been in a long time. And your coach get fired. That's not normal. Going to Detroit, taking a team that hasn't won in a few years and been dog for a few years, brought them back to actually a really good team and a really good camp, like going the way that you would love to see an organization go, right? So I have to say that he's a great coach. I think Kenny Atkinson just was a breath of fresh air for Cleveland. His schemes, the way he's using Evan Mobley, the way he's spacing the floor out, his, you know, get guys getting into the lane, creating guys alike playing with each other. Guys are getting open shots. Mitchell, he's a great leader, right? He's in the gym all the time. He loves the game. So I think that they have the pieces. I just don't know if the time is now. But for sure, in these next 2 to 3 years, Cleveland is going to win a championship or get to the championship. I can almost guarantee that.
So it seems like this year you're just leaning towards some of these teams that have proven it. Boston.
Only one team, not some of these teams. But one team.
Well, Lakers, the Celtics just won a title. Lakers have won before with LeBron. Luka's been to a championship. So these teams that have these star players, these leaders on their teams that have been there and done that. So like, it seems like you're leaning that way versus OKC hasn't done it. Cleveland hasn't done it. And some of these other teams haven't done it. And by the way, also, I'm sure Adam Silver would very much love your championship pick, Celtics Lakers.
Oh man, I think basketball would love it. But I mean, just think about it. Luka goes to the Lakers. You got the greatest player ever in LeBron James. You got Luka Doncic. You got Jason Tatum, and that whole gang right there. That's like must see TV.
Peyton Pritchard,
hell of a player, man. If Peyton Pritchard wasn't on the Celtics and he had a real shot of like playing somewhere in the league with significant minutes, he'd be a hell of a guy. Like, he's a hell of a guy now.
All-star potential for Peyton Pritchard?
I wouldn't go that far, but I would say he'd be a really good other. I call him super other. Like, my career is based on a super other. He's a super other, guy that can really get it done.
Star in his role, that type of guy.
Exactly, and if another guy go down, he can be the guy, okay, we need you to get 20. Like, we need you to actually play, right? So, I believe in that. But let's go back to the Cleveland thing. Love Cleveland. I love what they're doing over there. Top-notch organization. The guys are like really coachable. And you just have a lot of bodies. They just got Hunter from Atlanta, another Philly guy.
Lineup versatility with him.
Hey, man, they really got better. And they understand the dynamic of the players, the coaches. Like, that whole thing over there that they're doing, I had a good chance to be a part of that. And I really think that, like, they're going to be one of the teams to be the with in these next couple years.
So, last thing, Celtics Lakers finals, who wins that then? Lakers, right? Of course, you're biased because you're
brother. Yeah, I'm going to go with my brother. But I'm only going with if he plays. If he doesn't play, like, then I'm going to say this. I'm going to say Boston because I think I honestly believe this in my heart. And I know people would say, that's your brother. You know, you guys are old, whatever they may be. Because I will go on. Anybody can check it up in the fucking LA Fitness and I'll show you how old I am. Right? So let's just make sure. Let's
Brian
make that
Scalabrine
shit clear.
Played some pickup recently. Yeah. And Scal was talking trash to the guy. He says, I'm too closer to LeBron James than you are to me.
I swear. And that's how I feel. So, brother works hard. I think that he can really get out there and I think he could be an X factor in one of those series just because, you know, you need a five man that can spread the floor and experience.
And forces. The Morris brothers.
Got to, because I'm going to be front row watching this.
Marcus, appreciate you joining me today.
Nah, no doubt, man. No doubt. Thanks for having me, my guy.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
A big thank you to Mark Titus for joining me on today's podcast and to Marcus Morris, recording in person. That was a lot of fun talking with him. Marcus Morris, bright future in sports media. Once he goes full in on this, him and Mark Keefe could do a lot of fun stuff together. I was shocked at how open he was about absolutely everything, but had a lot of fun talking with him. Marcus Morris, Mark Titus, thank you guys for joining me. Thanks to Emmy and Mike for producing today's episode of The Kevin O'Connor Show. Give us a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple, a thumbs up on YouTube. It really does help out the show. Hope you have a great rest of your week. Enjoy all of the games, NBA and college basketball. We'll be back again later in the week.